Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, October 6, 2011. And tonight's show will be rather interesting. I'm going to review what's happened over this past week. Specifically, last Friday night, I was a guest on Coast to Coast, which is not unusual. I am many times, a lot of times as the main guest, but last Friday I was a guest, as I am many times, for the news segment, which is the beginning of the show. And the topic was a solar update. Well, in the time I was getting ready for the show and looking, doing my homework and making sure I had the most up-to-date information, I noticed that a comet was racing into the solar system and heading directly towards the sun. So in my brief news segment there, I mentioned that. I said a comet's coming in and it's going to hit the sun within the next 12 hours. Anyway, the incidents, the sequence of events that pursued were really, really interesting, not only the science aspect of this, but the political aspect, where NASA at that time, it was exactly at the time when I had my news interview on Coast to Coast, that NASA pulled the plug on the public feeds from the SOHO satellite and other satellites from which we get this data. We're able to see the sun through the satellite images that are constantly updated, and NASA pulled the switch. And so there was no data available until Sunday. So anyway, the sequence of events was quite interesting. This happened last Friday night. I then was a guest on Coast to Coast Monday night to give a brief update on the events. But not, the bottom line was, when that comet hit the sun on Saturday morning, early Saturday morning, the sun blew off its cover, literally, and started a series of massive explosions that lasted over 8 hours. A corroborating webpage with NASA called spaceweather.com put up a posting and said, there were a couple minor flares on the sun. Never mentioned anything about the comet. It was well into Sunday until finally they were forced, because of internet pressure from people who knew finally that something had hit the sun. There was a massive explosions. And so then Space Weather posts it saying, that was just coincidence. And there's nothing to this. There's no mechanism for a little teeny comet to cause the sun to explode. So at any rate, tonight I'm going to go through that, but more importantly, I'm going to look at the physics of this. Why does a comet cause the sun to explode? What's the physical process? And of course, NASA claims that comets are little poofy snowballs a couple miles across, and there's a little dusting of snow on them that melts and sublimates when they come near the sun, and that's what causes the tail. And it's just fairy tale science. It's a theory that should have never gotten off the ground back in the 1950s, and it shouldn't be here right now. But the whole sequence of events, you know, as listeners, that I've been talking about NASA for many months now, trying to build up this, and Space Weather is corroborating, to build up this image that the sun is just going to blow its top off and it's going to shut down the U.S. power grid. Well, when I first was hearing this, I said there's no scientific basis for this. But at any rate, I'll go into that on the show, and then I'm going to give the physics of what is going on with the sun. By the way, our temperatures across the board are a good 30 to 40 degrees above normal. So it's my contention that not only is NASA not reporting the explosions and other activity that resulted from this comet, but it's very obvious that our 50-degree weather that was predicted, all of a sudden we're in the mid to high 80s day after day after day. And this is not just in one locale. This is everywhere around the globe, that this comet is also created an excited state on the sun with a higher level of fusion and it's pouring out a tremendous amount of energy, light energy, and that's what heats us up. So at any rate, that's a follow-up story. There's a number of follow-up stories. I will be playing a 15-minute segment. Now, Tuesday, the news had gotten around. People were calling radio stations going, what's going on here? We heard that a comet hit the sun and it's exploded. NASA's hiding data, trying to cover it up. And so I got called to do a number of interviews, and one really good one that included all of the points that I wanted to make about this event was with Scriptures for America. Jason over at Scriptures for America called me up and he said, we're getting all these calls. People want to know what's going on. It was an impromptu interview. It is about 15 minutes long. I'm going to play that on the air here so you can hear that. And then I'm going to discuss some of the further points of this. I'll also, before I get going too far in this, I just want to give Bank of America a little bit of an honorable mention here. It looks like Bank of America is tanking. From what feedback I've gotten from other talk show hosts who are covering this today, that they're actually in New York City, they had police in front of the doors of Bank of America to prevent people from going in and taking their money out. I know the report about a week and a half ago, front page headline in the newspaper, Bank of America laying off 40,000 people. I don't know how many people they employ, but 40,000 is more than a few. This was at about the same time as the post office announcing a layoff of 160,000 people. But Bank of America tanking, and I'm starting what I call kick 'em while they're down program. If you can do anything to Bank of America, get your money out for sure if you have any money there. I'm just, you know, what else can you do? If you have a loan with them, don't pay them. I'm just trying to think, you know, these are not your friends. These banks are not your friends. And I'm seeing the Wall Street issues with the organizations, people now parading in front of and protesting in front of the Federal Reserve banks around the country. People are waking up. This is the root cause of the problems, not only here, but around the world. The wars, the ongoing so-called war on terrorism. It's very clear who is causing the problems that we are dealing with. We need our country back. We need our monetary system back. We need our constitutional government back. This is not revolution. This is just common sense. And those people, let me tell you, around the world, there are probably 60 third world countries right now in an alliance, some of them more loosely, some of them more strongly in alliances against the United States. They're not against you and me. They're against the Federal Reserve and the policies of the federal government of the United States because they are being controlled by the world bankers. I just saw a headline a number of weeks ago where it was like everybody was supposed to be waiting for bated breath for the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, to come in and bail out the United States. Well, that's who bails out third world countries, with phony money, phony loans, and then they come in and force the economic situation so the loans can't be paid back, then they come in and grab the natural resources. So at any rate, this formula has been tried and true for them, but they're on the way out. I don't think if I would want to be a banker these days, because there's not a lot of lost love for these people. I just wanted to throw in my 2 cents. So as I said, kick 'em while they're down program. If you can do anything to Bank of America to drive them into the ground, I encourage it. Let me put it that way. Okay. On with some science here. As I said, I'll be talking about the increase in temperatures. 80 and 90 degree temperatures in October is not unheard of. We didn't necessarily set records because on an individual basis, on an individual day, if you go back into history, you will find 80 and 90 degree temperatures through October, but not all in a row and not after a comet hit the sun. So the point is that the biggest point is that the temperatures were predicted to be in the 50s. They're in the 80s, in close to 90 degrees for days and days in a row. Something very big has happened. NASA at one point was given a charter to monitor the solar output, and I remember following that study, and they ended up, because the daily output of the sun was variable. It was up here and it was down there and it was all over, and it didn't fit the black body curve that it should for something that has a nuclear engine in the core. Nothing about the sun made sense. So they threw out the study with the baby with the bathwater, and nothing ever happened with that. Somewhere, there's many, 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 there's probably 50 major solar observatories that are ground-based around the world. We have a number of satellites that are in orbit around the sun, the SOHO satellite and the STEREO A and B satellites, and then a number of other satellites constantly monitoring the sun. But there's a total of about 200 solar study bases around the Earth. And so you can't tell me that these people can't get their act together and make measurements. It's just simple spectroscopy. You got a source of light and heat and energy. It's coming out in electromagnetic radiation, and you have to measure that spectrum on a daily basis and record it. There's nothing too amazingly difficult about this, but why has NASA failed at that study? Anyway, that's another topic, but the point is our temperatures are 30 to 40 degrees higher than what they were predicted to be for the days we're in right now. Okay, without further ado, I am going to play, this is going to last about 15 minutes, understand that this interview was pre-recorded on Tuesday and played on the air, so this already has gotten a significant amount of airtime. But I wanted to play this interview because it is very concise. I hit all of the major points, and now I can use that as a stepping stone to talk, and I want to get into the science of how comets work. Why do they affect the sun? Why does a comet coming in cause major explosions on the sun, which then affect us? Two of those flares, by the way, were earthbound, and I'm starting to get reports that yesterday and Tuesday there were some major surges in the electric grid, which caused a lot of electrical problems. So if you had electronic equipment that was plugged in and then failed in the last couple of days, you're not alone. You're probably in very good company. So at any rate, here, without further ado, it's going to take me a second to set up this feed so we can listen to this show, but just hold on for a second, and we'll be listening to the 15-minute pre-recorded interview this last Tuesday, October 4th. It's myself with Jason from Scriptures for America. So hold on just 1 second.
On the program on such a short notice, and I just would ask if you would go ahead and educate our audience and give us an update on what NASA is covering up.
Wow, this past weekend, this right now we're talking Tuesday, this is what, October 4th, on September 30th on Friday, I was on, many times I'm a news guest on called Coast to Coast AM, the radio show out of Los Angeles. And a lot of times I'm on the first hour to give a news update, which I was Friday night, dealing with solar activity. I gave a little bit of a solar update. I said the sun was at pretty low energy levels. And I mentioned that in about 12 hours, I just noticed that a comet was coming in and was going to hit the sun. And so I was looking at the NASA satellite feeds that give the data that show the sun, and I very clearly showed this comet coming in from the southern angle and heading directly towards the sun. And I figured, more or less, it would be hitting the sun in about 12 hours. It was making a beeline towards the sun. Okay, so that was the start of this. after that announcement, then I kept watching through the night, watching the satellite, and NASA had taken down the satellite feed. They took down any information that we'd be able to use to see the sun as that comet came in and hit. Now, NASA claims that comets are little snowballs and they couldn't possibly affect the sun. Well, why are they hiding data? And, of course, what I've said all along is comets are electrical in nature. They can interact with the sun electrically, and in a case like this would potentially have a big discharge effect on the sun. In other words, the sun would go into what are known as coronal mass ejections and cause a big explosion, basically. Well, it turned out I was right, and what happened is, as we found later, as the data started to emerge on Sunday, the sun blew up. I mean, it just had a tremendous series of explosions when that comet hit. NASA was hiding the data. Another web page, which is a NASA-sponsored web page, it's called spaceweather.com, put a posting up on Saturday saying that, oh, the sun had a couple minor flares, nothing to write home about. Never mentioned the comet. And all this time, I'm writing, trying to communicate with SpaceWeather, saying, where's the data? Where's the data that should be put up here from NASA showing this comet hitting the sun? Well, finally, this is a very interesting twist to this story. Amateurs started posting live feeds from NASA satellites on Saturday, and I was going, where are these people getting these feeds? They're not publicly available. Well, it turns out that NASA has a whole bunch of individuals out there, and they're like Johnny up the street and Mary up the street, and they're just God talks to them, and they're just posting things for people to see. Well, they were getting live feeds from NASA that weren't publicly available, so this keyed me in, and they were
claiming. Well, that tells you what they are, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, and so anyway, they're saying, oh, this is just an asteroid hitting the sun. Well, it wasn't an asteroid, it was a comet. Two very different things. And so anyway, the end result was the sun on Saturday morning, early Saturday morning, really exploded. Not once, but for about an 8-hour period, just multiple big, major explosions.
And that's a long time for something like that to go on, isn't it?
Usually it's a minute or two. Sometimes it's only a few seconds when an explosion like that occurs. So for something to occur and go on for like 8 hours, it's just unheard of. And multiple explosions. And as I said, when I gave my report on Friday night, the sun was very much quiescent. It was very low energy. And so it was just amazing the level of energy that came out of the sun when that thing exploded. So at any rate, now let's go up to Sunday. Finally, spaceweather.com puts up a posting showing the video of the comet hitting the sun and the big explosion coming out. Then they say there's no known mechanism for this to happen, so we just have to say this is coincidence. This is just a coincidence that all of this flaring and explosions on the sun happened when this comet came in, and it was just a coincidence that the explosions occurred at the same time. But then, I mean, I have videos of hundreds of these incidents happening when a comet comes in, gets near the sun. It's like a spark plug. It ignites the sun and causes massive explosions on the surface of the sun. But none of this makes sense according to NASA's pet theories, so they're basically hiding the data. But let's go back to the original thing that I had said many months ago. Okay, this is a complicated story. Many months ago, and this, first of all, let's understand that the sun has been at the lowest ebb in energy it's been in probably 300 years, probably longer, up until Galileo was the first person to start observing sunspots. We went through a period of over 2 years without any sunspots. The sun was at its low ebb in its solar cycle, and it wasn't coming out of that low ebb. And so the sun was at the lowest ebb in its cycle in really 500 years probably. And so NASA all of a sudden a couple months ago comes out and he says, and they say, make an announcement. We're expecting a major solar flare that's going to take down the U.S. power grid. And I'm thinking to myself, what are they talking about? There's no scientific basis for such a statement. Why would they make such a statement when the sun is at the lowest energy level it's been for ages? So I said, they're going to do the following. They're going to wait for any solar flare, even a moderate-sized one, to come at Earth, and they're going to come out and make a statement, oh, the grid has gone down because of this, and then the people in charge, the people that are waiting for an event to try and shut down the United States socially, economically, and militarily, are going to pull the plug on the United States electric grid. And there's nothing that would shut this country down from corner to corner, from north, south, east, and west. Every section of it would be shut down because of it. And then they could blame it on a solar flare. Well, isn't it ironic that the thing that caused the solar flare they were looking for is a comet? A comet is something that NASA claims cannot interact with the sun. It's just a little ice ball. It has no power at all. So now NASA's got egg all over its face. The much-needed flare they needed to shut down the solar grid comes when a comet comes in and they hide the data.
So now they've got to cover up what they've been waiting for.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So as I said, this is a complex story, but these are the kind of things that I follow. Some people follow economics. I follow science. Now we find out that NASA has this whole fleet of individuals, Johnny and Susie up the street, that start posting YouTube videos and making quack claims. Like this one lady claims that God talks to her and she's been making these postings for your safety. And they'll post anything.
While NASA's supplying her with a private access to their satellite feeds on what's going on the sun.
Yeah.
So she says God talks to her and NASA's talking to her at the same time.
Yeah, and then this one guy gets done with his video and he goes, we really love spaceweather.com. Keep up the good work. And it's, you can see where all this is coming from, but I am amazed at the amount of effort they are putting into keeping real information from the public.
I tried to look at some of the information too, and it just got so confusing. I mean, some of the stuff you don't know what to believe, and I mean, the different things that they were talking about, it was kind of mind-boggling to me. And that's what it's a lot clearer now after you explained it. That's for sure.
Right. And then now we're at Tuesday, Jason, and the prediction, I follow the weather just like everybody else does in my location. I'm in Minnesota, you're in Wyoming. I looked at the weather prediction for this week, and we were supposed to have weather in the 50s. We're now at 82. So that's a 30-degree difference.
Yeah.
I think the sun is really pouring out a huge amount of energy right now, and they're not talking about that either. And I'm seeing this consistently across the United States. You said you were probably about 25 degrees.
Yeah, we're 25 degrees warmer than what they predicted here. And
yeah.
We're here in the middle of, or not the middle of, but the beginning of October. And, you know, we haven't had a hard frost here yet, which is just unheard of.
Yeah. So could this comet, which caused this flaring, also have resulted in a huge amount of increase in energy in the sun? And there again, no word from NASA. They had a scientific assignment a number of years ago to measure the energy output of the sun. And that's something that should have been made publicly available, and they never did. I know they were having a lot of trouble measuring because they thought the sun should be giving out a constant amount of energy. And what they found was that it's giving out a highly variable amount of energy. So at any rate, it's a complex story when you look at all the scientific graphs and curves. But the bottom line is the sun isn't doing what it's supposed to be doing. It's very much different. So something very different is going on with the sun. Then, let me just add one note. Over the weekend, NASA slipped the story into CNN. and it's some news agency I've never heard of, some like Truth News Agency, I don't know, but it came out on CNN, what I call Candy Nugget News. But anyway, it's a guy making an announcement for NASA that there's a giant planet in our solar system, a brown dwarf. And that's how it starts out. It's right here in our solar system. And the very next thing the guy says, but it's way out beyond Pluto. And it, so he totally contradicts himself. And he's talking really fast. And this is a typical disinformation campaign trying to make it grab the people who think are thinking about Planet X, for example. Oops, it's in the solar system, but no, it's way out there, folks. Don't worry about it. But it's going to be sending a lot of comets into our solar system. Well, there's not a lot of comets out in the region beyond Pluto that he's talking about, so none of this makes any sense, even if you buy the goofy theories that NASA tries to put out. But you see how...
Double-mindedness, yep, trying to confuse people.
Just confusing information, and it's coming directly from NASA. That news announcer did not make up what he was saying. He was reading what he was told to say, which is totally confusing information coming from NASA.
Absolutely.
So anyway,
well, and I did read about some of this on your website. Why don't you give people your website? So, yeah.
Okay, I am back live. That was an interview with, as I said, we pre-recorded on Tuesday with Jason from Scriptures for America. The point is, that was a well-rounded interview, and sometimes it's just best to refer to what I've already recorded. It just covered all of those points really well. I want to expand on that interview right now and talk about the physics of what's going on with the sun. And so the politics of all of this, that's one issue. It also shows, as I said, that NASA has these little people running around the internet that they can get to report things and try and grab the public attention, grab it away from my website, to make all kinds of claims, and then slide the topic into something else so the public gets deceived. At any rate, let me go into some topics here. Let's see. I already talked about the temperature increasing in about 30 degrees above the predicted temperatures. And then I just wanted to reiterate that spaceweather.com came out and said, but this is just pure coincidence. And instead of paraphrasing what they said, I want to say exactly, I'll read exactly what they posted on their webpage. Remember that Saturday to Sunday, they posted that there were a couple flares on the sun and refused to report anything about the comet. Finally, by Sunday, the explosion of demands and information was so great that they had to come out and say something. So they said that that as the comet hit the sun, the end was punctuated by an unexpected explosion. Unexpected explosion. And then it says to watch this movie again. They post the movie from the SOHO satellite, which shows the comet coming in, striking the sun, and the explosions. And then, okay, this is quoting again, reading from spaceweather.com. The timing of the CME so soon after the comet dove into the sun suggests a link. But what? There is no known mechanism for comets to trigger solar explosions. I'll just put a parenthetical note in here that that's what I've been talking about for decades, but of course, they do not want to refer to this. They just want to refer to the standard NASA fairy tale science that would suggest comets are dirty snowballs. Okay, I'll keep reading. Before 2011, most solar physicists would have discounted the events of October 1st as pure coincidence. And pure coincidence is still the most likely explanation. Okay, so anyway, these people, it's not even funny anymore how ridiculous it is, but the thing is, it's great to see the public out there understanding what's going on politically. Okay, now regarding the science, why does a comet, how could a comet, which is relatively small, the nucleus being relatively small, of course, way smaller than the sun, how could it cause a solar flare from the sun? It's like the mouse helping the lion, the old story.
Excuse me.
But at any rate, here's what happens, as I've said before. The sun builds up a capacitor. The sun is putting out an excess current.
I'm
losing my voice a little bit here. Hopefully we'll regain it. The sun is like a capacitor. It's putting out an excess current of positive charge as it the fusion engine up in its surface. And the sun is highly variable. It puts out a very complicated but variable energy output, both in light energy, electromagnetic energy, and also in electrical energy. But the bottom line is that due to this excess current of positive charge moving out of the sun's surface, it builds up a big electric field of capacitor. And when a comet comes in, the comet is literally the discharge of that solar capacitor. I liken it to the backyard bug killer. So the point is that, okay, now the sun has this big energy tank around it, so to speak, electrical energy tank. When the comet comes in, it discharges that energy. The electrical current comes in via the comet. In fact, that's what the comet is. It's an electrical discharge. And as it gets close to the sun, it acts like a spark plug. The sun fusion on the surface is an electrical fire. So adding more, like a punch, like a spark plug, is going to do nothing but cause more fusion. That's exactly what we see. Now, the question is, with pressure on NASA, I can just see the little solar physicists with their skinny little ties and baggy pants that are 20 years old working for NASA, sitting in a room trying to figure out how they can make a little snowball that's a couple miles wide and they've been saying for 30 years that it can have no effect on the sun and there's no reason to think it would have any effect on anything. Now they're beset with the fact that the public knows, the public's watching, and are they going to do, they have two options, or they actually have three. One is they could say that Jim McCaney is right, that what he's been doing for 30 years is completely correct, comets are not dirty snowballs, they could admit the truth, but you know they're not going to do that. Possibility number two is that they would try and doctor up their dirty snowball comet model so now little teeny snowballs can come racing in and cause the sun to blow up, causing some kind of instability. I can just see the PhDs writing papers, getting them published in Science and Nature magazine, and then everything will be back to normal. That's exactly what happened. 1996 was a good example. In the late 1970s, when I published my original papers on comets, I said, let's look at the distinguishing factors. What will set this theory apart from the dirty snowball comet model? At the time, it was called the dirty ice ball comet model, but same idea, that it's a conglomerate of ice and but small and with very little power. And I said, no, these comets are electrical discharges of the solar capacitor. And I said, the one thing that'll set my theory apart, the plasma discharge comet model, from the dirty snowball comet model, the one thing that'll distinguish it is I predict X-rays far to the sunward side of the comet nucleus. Those were discovered by accident in 1996. Is one of the NASA satellites was accidentally pointed at a comet. They were detected, and it took NASA about a year to come up with their little theories for why ice balls should have X-rays 30,000 miles to the sunward side of the comet nucleus. Then everything got back to normal, and I went to the international meetings, sat in the posters and in the talk sessions next to these scientists, and they're just all, oh yeah, ion exchange and all of these other concepts. to try and explain why comets should have X-rays to the sunward side, but they never could explain why just comets. Ion exchange happens in front of all the planets. The planets are bigger. We should have more X-rays in front of Earth than little comets, but little comets have far, far more X-ray activity, 30,000 or 50,000 or 100,000 miles to the sunward side of the nucleus. But see, that's the fairy tale science. They don't have to answer real questions because in the peer-reviewed journals, they're reviewed by their buddies. That's the way it works. So at any rate, the real story, comets, yes, are very energetic items. That's why they can light up like a light bulb. The ancients talk about it. The Hopi Indians very pointedly talk about the comets being the harbingers of disaster, and they say specifically that the blue comets are the dangerous ones. Why blue comets? Because blue is associated with hot light, like ultraviolet, the upper blue end of the light spectrum, means hot. Red is the cooler end of the spectrum. The blue ones, the hot comets, the ones with a lot of electrical energy passing through, the ones that light up like a light bulb, you can see them in the daytime, you can see them at night, and they're wild, they dance around, they'll send lightning bolts off to the planets as they pass through the solar system, and yes, they interact with the sun, and yes, when the sun interacts, it's going to cause earth changes, it's going to cause electrical, magnetic, and heat effects on Earth that would not have happened normally. So at any rate, now the ancients talk about this. The ancients talk about the big comets having wars in the sky. The Colburn talks about it. Velikovsky's work talks about Venus, the comet, coming through the solar system and eventually becoming the planet Venus. This is what my work explains. All of this is anticipated in my theoretical work that came around the late 1970s. And it was based on work that I had been looking at. I had also done a lot of work in archaeology, out in the field, down in around digs in Central America and south of the border, let's put it that way. And you could see that one of the overriding currents in the mythology and the religions and the mathematics of the Mayans, of the Aztecs, of the Incas, was that an amazing event had occurred, and Quetzalcoatl was the central figure. Who was Quetzalcoatl? He was a snake-like figure with a big tongue. The tongue is the electrical discharge. All of this figurative, mind you, because what we see now in the cities, etc., in South America and Central America and in Mexico, the ruins of these ancient civilizations, these are the modern civilizations still carrying on the tradition and still focusing on Venus with their calendar central figure is not the moon, not the sun, but Venus. So at any rate, this is what happens. Now, how does a comet affect winds on Earth? Okay, the comet interacts with the sun. The sun throws out a solar flare. And by the way, my understanding is, from what I could see in the data, two major flares were coming at Earth from the result of the comet. And these flares continued over a long period of time. So the wave of electrical energy passes Earth. That's translated through the magnetic field. That couples with the upper ionosphere on Earth. In the upper ionosphere, we have jet streams of electrical currents. And when those magnetic fields compress and change the upper ionosphere, that translates down into winds down lower in the troposphere, the weather system part of the atmosphere on Earth. So that is the mechanism by which solar flaring affects Earth weather, the winds, the clear skies. We've had amazingly clear skies over the past days, and not just in my part of the country, but over the whole United States, very high pressure cells. So these effects, and once again, there have to be scientists sitting all over with government paid equipment at the solar observatories, at the other observatories that observe the upper ionosphere, etc., that are seeing all of this happening, and because it doesn't make sense to them that they can't associate a comet, and none of them would ever in a million years dare go against the astronomical community and their beliefs, because they would lose their jobs in a New York second. Okay, I want to explain another type of comet. Now, this comet that came in and hit the sun was unnamed. It did not have a name. There was no time to name it. I'm not sure if I'm the first person to record and announce this comet. I announced it on the Coast to Coast AM radio show on Friday night, and I don't know if it had been discovered before, but at any rate, it did not have a name. Many, many, many comets come in and hit the sun. They come in from the south. This one came in from the south. There's a particular region of the solar system that comets come from very frequently, and the study of these comets goes back to the 1800s, where a guy named Crutz was studying these comets and noticed the same thing. They come in all sizes. The one that came in on Friday night was big. It was a big comet. It was had a big nucleus, obviously, and but it was very large in terms of comets. Many of the Crutz comets are very small. But NASA has then, in its standard science community, have defined a theory which is once again a fairy tale theory. It has no basis in reality and cannot be proved. What they're saying is that once upon a time, I'll do it just like in typical fairy tale language. Once upon a time, there was a big ice ball far, far away in the solar system that broke up and caused all of these comets to come into the sun, and everybody lived happily ever after. But there's a problem with this. If a comet breaks up, all of those pieces are going to be localized. They're not going to come raining in for the next 150 years. They might come in over a half a year period. They might come in over a 1 month period. But they're not going to come in over a 150 year period. Something else big is going on, and it has nothing to do with a Crutz comet or an ice ball that broke up 150 years ago out in the far reaches of the solar system. Once again, superficial first layer theorizing by standard science could not possibly be true in a million years, but all they got to do is make that statement. Oh, an ice ball broke up a long time ago, and everybody lives happily ever after, because, as I said, nobody can ask a critical question in the peer-reviewed journals because it's just a buddy system. So, what is the story with the Crutz comets? Where did they come from? Why do they keep raining in from the south? And I have a concept that, first of all, we know that comets have meteor streams associated with them. And typically, meteors are very small items. They might be the size of a grain of sand up to the size, a big, big one might be the size of a baseball. But the Crutz comets are big. There's a lot of little ones, too, but a lot of the Crutz comets are big, like the one that came in now. It might have been a quarter of the size of our moon, the nucleus of the comet. And, of course, we can't see these because they're well hidden in the comet coma. But at any rate, let me speculate here, and I think this is about as close to accurate as can be. If there were a major, and I'm talking major, planetary or stellar type object that would come into the solar system, it would draw in meteorite type materials into its trail. We know that comets have meteor streams associated with them. So instead of this comet breaking up as a dirty snowball, this comet continued. It came through the solar system, interacted with the sun, came around the sun, swung out into the far reaches of the solar system and left, Possibly it'll come back someday, and possibly it will not. It's just one of the many Planet X objects. And it left its meteor stream. Every year we cross through the Leonids, we cross through the Aquarids, we cross through many, many Earth crosses on this little narrow path around the Sun. We cross many meteor streams just in our little section of the solar system. So we know out there in outer space, in near Earth, in the inner solar system, there have to be thousands and thousands of meteor streams that we don't know anything about because we don't cross them in our orbit. Their meteor streams don't come raining into our atmosphere, and we don't have a nice pattern. There's no way to detect these with satellites. They're just small bands of rock circling the Sun in the same orbit as a comet. And why do comets attract meteor streams? I explain that in my theoretical work. The meteors contain metals, and that's something that is universally common. If meteors came from dirty snowballs that melted and disintegrated, then you'd have all kinds of meteors. Meteors that didn't contain metals. But meteors in general contain metals. What is it so special about metals? Well, it turns out that an electric field around a comet, it's a non-uniform electric field, causes an induced attractive force. This is not gravity, this is an induced electrical force in objects with metals in them, causing them to trail along in the path of the comet. So as the comet moves along, it not only has a tail that it is attracting, it has a series of streams of smaller objects that contain metals. So I think it would be safe to say that we could measure the spectral output of the Crookes comets, and we would find that they pretty much in general contain metals. As they hit the Sun, as they disintegrate, as they barrel into the Sun, we're going to see a large amount of metal coming out of these comets, the Crookes comets. Why? Because they were attracted through the electric field of a passing large comet, and they are the remnant. They're the ones that are left in the orbit, just like any meteor stream. So they are associated with comets, but they are not the remnant of a big snowball that broke up. As I said, if that were the case, then 150 years ago, within a one-month period, all of that material would have crashed into the Sun, and that would have been the end of it, or it would have been grouped. But these come in constantly. It's constant, constant, constant. And so it doesn't fit. There's not a celestial mechanics fit to the data, if you assume the dirty snowball comet model or the standard science model, where a large ice ball broke up at one time 150 years ago. It does fit the model of a very large Planet X type object roaring through the solar system, leaving its meteor stream very close to the Sun, and then leaving. The question is, will that object return someday? When exactly was it here last? Was it here 1,000 years ago? No, probably not. It could have been, because there have been some big comets that people have observed. Was it here 1 million years ago, 10 million years ago, 65 million years ago? We don't know. We don't have data that would suggest what the orbit of the original main body may have been. But at any rate, as I said, the comet crashing into the Sun this past week gives me a chance to talk about solar physics. Let's talk about something else, a little other political anecdote here. As I said, NASA and spaceweather.com for months and months were building up any little solar flare that may have occurred, any little puff that came off the Sun. It was like, whoa, oh my goodness, the Sun is just going ballistic. And it was nothing at all. These were non-events that they were trying to make into big events. And I watched this with curiosity. I thought, why are these people doing this? I mean, they could be doing it for funding. Maybe their funding is in question and they're just trying to build up a story. But then I thought, you know, this doesn't make sense because there's plenty of other things going on that they could talk about. And they always get their money anyway. So why building up this big story? And so then about a month ago, I did a report on this show on auroras. And I'm a particularly keen observer of auroras. And I happen to live in a northern region. I happen to go into farther northern regions where I see auroras on a regular basis. And so I said, you know, this season, and then as we went through August, I finally, towards the end of August, on this show, I said, we have not had an aurora season. We have not had the auroras. And you can see the Earth orbiting satellites. You can see the auroras. You can see where they are on a constant basis. And there are satellites that you can actually see the auroras, see how intense they are, etc. And they would always be concentrated up around the polar regions, the North Polar region and the South Polar region. In historically, when major solar flares occurred, and they hit Earth, when we really got hit by a good solar flare or solar activity or major solar electrical magnetic activity, the auroras would, it was like a ring around the pole, but that ring would get very large and would start moving down to lower latitudes. So there's a term that you use, that the auroras are at high latitudes, and that's pretty much normal. And they can get very intense or they can get very weak, and this thing pulses back and forth with the solar wind, with other solar activity, storm activity that might be going on. But we had not seen throughout this whole auroral season, most of that concentration was in the very high latitudes. And so it was amazed me when spaceweather.com would make such a big deal about an aurora that somebody saw up beyond the Arctic Circle and made it sound like this was just truly amazing. And oh, was the sun ever beside itself? And I thought that was certainly curious because it had really been a pretty nothing auroral season. And that's something I reported on. And I got done with that show and I pulled up some of the standard websites and they were talking about the explosive aurora season, how amazing it was. And I'm going, wait a minute, this isn't even true. There's auroras. If you go up to the Arctic Circle, you're always going to see auroras. And there were a couple intense ones, sure. But the real measure of the intensity of auroras is when they expand out and get down, if they get into the 50 states, if they get into the northern states and they're very intense, that's a pretty good solar storm. If you can see them in Missouri, then you got a really good storm going. If you can see them in Cairo, Egypt, you have a real major, major solar storm going on. So that's how I measure, and that's how any solar physicist or Earth weather physicists should measure the auroras. How far down do they go in the latitude? If they get down into the lower latitudes, the northern United States or Iowa, or get down into Missouri, for example, those are major solar activity indicators. But nothing this year got anywhere close. There were a couple times when you could look far, far to the north into the night sky, and you might see a little bit way north. Now, you have to understand the auroras are probably 50 miles up in the atmosphere. So if you're looking north and you see them just along the horizon, they are hundreds, if not 1,000 miles or more, maybe 2,000 miles away from you. They're not south where you are. Say you're standing on the northern border of the United States, between Canada and the United States. If you look far to the north and see them, that's not a big deal. That's nice to see, but it does not indicate a major solar storm. So the point is that this has been a pretty much a nothing year for auroras. And so I was amazed at the fact that spaceweather.com and NASA were trying to build up this nothing story as if it were really something, But then, ironically, when the comet hit the sun Friday night or Saturday morning, they played it down as if, well, there was a couple solar flares, and any auroras would be way at high latitudes. And that was, of course, before I saw the real data, when the comet hit the sun and just major, major, major explosions. And these are explosions that would have called your attention at any time during a solar maximum. But spaceweather.com tried to minimize it and just pretend like really nothing major happened at all, and that there were multiple flares. Specifically, sunspot 1302 was something that everybody's kind of been watching recently because it got to be fairly big and there were a couple fairly good explosions come out of it. But by Friday night, it had gone down in energy to the point where it was hardly noticeable at all. It had diminished in size. There was another sunspot 1305, which may have developed, but it wasn't. It was getting smaller in size. All of the sun was going down in energy, down, down, down. And all of a sudden the comet hits, and for 8 hours the sun exploded and boomed. This was ironic that spaceweather.com announced that the two sunspots 1302 and 1305 blew in succession, in rapid succession, kind of like a machine gun, and were linked together. And so, and they were, in terms of the solar surface, they were quite far apart. But never, never mentioned that the comet came in at the same time. Not until Sunday, when the data was all over the internet. I had finally gotten some other ground-based pictures of the sun. That's when I realized how big the explosions were. Then I started posting. I said, okay, the gloves are off. This is it. I cannot stand the manipulation that's going on. And then to find out, as I said in the interview, NASA has these little people posted around that they were feeding data to post on the internet and not letting the data out on the standard public feeds. This is an amazing story, but one thing that it tells you also is that don't expect the truth from these standard government-sponsored websites. They're not going to tell you the truth. You're not going to get the truth from these people. And if something major and big comes in, like a Planet X type of object, then, believe me, you are not going to get the truth. Just a quick update. The CD, if you haven't heard the topics for the CD, I believe I gave them on last week's show. The two CD set, 18 hours of lectures on the two CD set. Go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. I'm very proud of this set of CDs. The first two CD set, the first has 13 hours. The second CD has 5 hours of lectures talking about the physics of ancient celestial disasters. This is a topic that I think you'll really want to study. There's a tremendous amount of information there. And I'm just about out of time here. I hope that the last week's lectures have been very informative. I tried to make a lot of emphasis on real Earth type of activities based on physics of the solar system so you understand. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.